Welcome to Inside the Wave podcast, episode 2. And today I have my jiu-jitsu coach, my mentor, John Freeland, joining us. Welcome, John.
Happy to be here.
To the podcast.
You're as much my coach as I am yours.
I appreciate that. So tell me a little bit about you. You've been doing jiu-jitsu for a minute or two. You have an academy or two. Let us know a little bit about you.
Well, I started jiu-jitsu in the late 90s, right? So like most people at that time, inspired by the Hoist Gracie performances in the first UFCs.
And you didn't really like start in the 80s because it didn't even like exist
right
in the US yet.
But what was neat about it though is martial arts did. So like that was like the Chuck Norris era and all that. And then like the fantasy, other Asian arts like Kung Fu, like these mystic things like Kung Fu, and then of course Taekwondo. And I was in Taekwondo and all that, like everybody else at the time. And that's what made us look at the UFC when it came on a little differently than regular people, I think, because we always theoretically thought, oh, Kung Fu is better than sumo, better than karate, better than jiu-jitsu. Yeah. We've heard of jiu-jitsu, of course, but to see it put to the test opened our eyes a little differently than, I guess, the layperson that watched the first few UFCs. So I think we had that slight little advantage or at least different way of looking at it, and it hooked everybody. Everybody that you know has been doing jiu-jitsu from that era, that was the hook.
So did you discover jiu-jitsu? For one, Taekwondo, what rank were you?
You know what's ridiculous? Anybody that's been in the military will think this is absolutely hilarious. I had just tested for my black belt right before I quit my Pizza Hut job to join the military. I received my black belt in the mail while in basic training in Georgia, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but there you've given up all your rights. They read your mail in front of everybody. They open your packages. They take your food, all your care packages, all the stuff.
So you were only like high fives.
It was like, oh, what is this, Friedland? What is this? I'm like, oh no. So then I'm the bane of everyone's joke because I still can't fight.
Yeah.
And so that was anybody that's in the military, if you could just imagine that your drill sergeant pulled out a black belt of like the skinniest guy in the platoon, pulls in front of everybody. I mean, as horrifying as it was at the time, I'm glad it happened.
Awesome. And is that before or after you found jiu-jitsu?
It was before.
Okay.
I joined the military in 94, 93 technically, but it was, the UFC was, I think, 93 or 92 or something. It was early 90s. We saw it and it was just like, jiu-jitsu, okay, jiu-jitsu, man, this little guy dragging the energy out of everybody and tying them up and mysteriously making them quit with this tapping out action.
Yeah.
You know, and it just planted the seed where it was like, okay, jiu-jitsu seems to be the one that just, if they came in striking, swinging, or even grappling, it always came ahead. So me getting beat up in the military later, I flashed back. I'm like, what can I possibly do? This is stupid. These guys are all bigger, just like you would expect. They all did some wrestling or they did better karate or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just remember flashing back to that Royce Gracie guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So then it was shortly after I got in and stationed in Germany. Me and my buddy who had a similar story just started privately training under the tutelage of Hoist and Horry and Gracie with a VHS tape in our barracks. When everyone else was out doing their Friday night shenanigans, we were there hiding.
Just practicing.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu.
And that was, you know, like all the martial arts can be empowering, right? But nothing was more empowering to me and probably ever since than always being on the bottom, always being the victim of bully, always losing every challenge I ever made and definitely everyone I ever accepted, just suddenly and almost overnight, realistically a few months, but it felt like overnight, we just stopped losing. No, we didn't win all of our fights, but we stopped losing. And like when you're no longer afraid your capital is going to be taken, you're more likely to move on theirs. And I think that's one of the first and quickest gifts you get in jiu-jitsu or any, you know, realistic applied fighting art is how quickly you go from the 99% to the 1%.
And I think sometimes, like, you don't have to always win. Sometimes, like, surviving is thriving, right? Like,
100%.
Like, our kids get bullied in school. You don't have to beat up the bully. But if you show the bully that what they're doing to you is not effective, that is a victory. That's sometimes a larger victory.
And a service to every other kid, too.
100%.
And so, you know, self-defense is, sure, you're defending yourself, but you're also defending everyone else.
Yeah.
Because you're willing to put yourself in a situation where I'm going to show you that your bullying isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just saved everybody else, too.
So you found jiu-jitsu in the military, training in, like, the super classic Gracie, like, garage gym kind of, where you're just, like, all self-discovery, all self-learning, no real instructor besides Mr. Sensei VHS.
Yeah.
If you guys know what VHS is, it's before DVDs, which is before Netflix.
What does VHS stand for?
I couldn't even.
Because I remember there was VHS and Beta were the two competing things, I think.
What is it?
I don't know. But it was, yeah, they're big and ugly. Any of the first videotapes.
Yeah.
Back when we were training, too, people were trying to record us. Not enough, unfortunately, but they would stick those big VHS tapes in a bigger thing.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was nuts. And they had smaller tapes, and, you know, evolved that way. Now the phones are super
yeah.
Guys, but so sorry.
So you found jiu-jitsu in the Army. You kept practicing jiu-jitsu. You did your services, your tours.
Mm-hmm.
And you eventually came back to Wisconsin, right?
Yes.
Okay. When was that?
So that was cool. So I got back, holy God, at the end of 96, early 97, jumped right into university. I wanted to get a quick transition back to Green Bay where I was. And I was just raving. I told everyone I could tell my fam. Nope. When you start jiu-jitsu, you want to tell everybody and no one wants to hear it. You know what I mean?
There's like CrossFit.
There's some advice for a new person. It's like, exactly. It's CrossFit. We're really kind of anything, yeah. But jiu-jitsu is so abstract.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody wants to hear it.
Especially if they see it, they're like, what are those two guys doing?
It's so, yeah. So, but I was one of those, I was that guy. I went through that phase. I'm like telling everybody and they're like, yeah. And, you know, he heard of this new Nintendo game, you know, or heard about the Green Bay Packers. And one of my friends was paying attention. And he said, you know, I just heard a radio announcement about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's as far away as Appleton, 30 minutes. Now, who wouldn't travel hours now? But I'm like, it's not the Jiu-Jitsu I'm talking about. This is just what we were talking about before we knew what Jiu-Jitsu
was. Yeah.
And he's like, I'll go down there with you, whatever. And he couldn't do it at the last minute or whatever. So I drove down by myself. And I went in there. I'm like, I'm just going to.
From Green Bay to Appleton.
Yeah, which is nothing. And that's what, yeah. And I went in there and I saw a bunch of people in gis,
yeah,
doing exactly what I thought jiu-jitsu was, the new jiu-jitsu that I saw, Royce Gracie, and it looked like the grainy, you called it the garage jiu-jitsu stuff.
Yeah.
Real grainy, just big Midwestern guys rolling around. Though. I was like, and the guy's like, oh, how you doing? I'm still little.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want to sign up for this. Like, just try a free class first. Like, no, I want, what's the maximum I can do right now? We could do 6 months or whatever. I'll pay it full right now.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, most people that do this don't make it a week or two. I'm like, no. I'm thinking I'm all hard.
Still a fact.
Well, still a fact, right? And I think as a side note, I think that's on us too as the leaders to try to soften that blow.
100%.
Right? Like to just widen that funnel of like give them a little bit of a treat. And even in your early days too, it wasn't the most accepting environment, right?
No.
And not to get off track too much, but like, people don't have to come in hard.
Yeah.
You can build resilience, you know, and we can, knowing that. But so back then it was like, you're right. People don't make it a week or two.
Yeah. Which we've actually, and I've seen you evolve your curriculum in your gym. Like you've removed some things from the warm-ups that are like super intimidating for newer people.
Hard,
but you change stuff up
to
adapt, right? Because our goal, like we still want to create hard individuals, like people that can defend themselves.
Yeah.
We want to create a lot of them, not a few of them. And if you kind of like phase everyone out, filter everyone out right away,
that's right.
They don't get a fair shot at finding out if it's for them or not.
Yeah, that's right. And if steel truly hardens steel or iron sharp as iron, we need more of it.
Yeah.
And we bounce off each other. It's like, I always use the analogy of like doing laundry or.
I hate doing laundry.
What about it? Imagine that person that loves doing laundry. I know some people, they actually, I should take it back because people do it as like meditation, just like dishes. But laundry is one thing, but or like a rock and a tumbler. Mm. Do you remember what tumblers are? Are tumblers a thing? We put it in, it makes it smooth.
Shiny?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That thing will get smooth faster with more rocks.
Yeah.
The piece of clothing you try to get cleaner will be cleaner with other clothing bumping up against it.
Yeah.
You know, people wash it by itself. Careful, it won't get as clean. But what? Now, also, if there's too many rocks, nothing gets polished.
Yeah.
You know, when you're fighting for mass space every day, nobody can move. You have to take turns and da-da. And the same in the wash, too.
Yeah.
So you're welcome for the laundry tip. But I mean, that's, I think that's a, you would have that perfect balance of contact and space.
Yeah.
Right.
So you did, you signed up for 6 months in Appleton. How many other like gyms were in the area in Wisconsin? Like we're like 96, 97.
If there was any gyms at all, and this, we have to look back at the history. There may have been one. It would have been Justin Morris probably, or maybe a Madison thing.
Yeah.
Way back then. Everywhere else that we were training was either like where I was, it was just a side project in a karate.
Yeah, I was gonna say, or it's not a jiu-jitsu school yet. It's like, hey, we're a karate school and we saw jiu-jitsu dominant in the UFC, so we're gonna practice some pajama runs.
That was all of it. Yep.
Okay.
And so, or people's basements. We went all the way up to, and that was the thing. It was on Friday nights, it was kind of like a tradition. We'd go up way up into Door County of all places. We'd go down to Milwaukee, of course.
Yeah.
Madison, Beaver Dam, Appleton. And then I started venturing to Chicago and then Atlanta and LA and New York. And then I just tried to get that was like the days of like, you went on like exploratory missions and brought it back.
Yeah.
But everybody was. So we were mixing it up. Like that's how like the melting pot started, at least for us in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's crazy because you in 97, you had to go travel to find a jiu-jitsu school. Even when I started in 2007, 10 years later, if I wanted to train with like a handful of color belts, like more than one, you'd still have to travel for it.
Yeah. Cause it comes in phases, right? So to find anybody at all that wanted to train jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You had to travel an hour or more half the time. And I remember one of the big concerns was like, how do I cover my rug burn? Not mat burn.
Yeah.
But rug burn. I mean, half of us didn't have mats. Half of us didn't have geese.
Yeah.
We certainly didn't have belts with tabs on them that we used to. And I, even in your early days, I believe
my first belt was wrapped in hockey tape.
Hockey tape. That's it. We made our own tabs. We want a tab like them.
Yeah. And I think the only way, and this is dating ourselves, because e-commerce like wasn't that big. You couldn't go online and order it. Like if you wanted a jiu-jitsu gi with a jiu-jitsu belt, you bought it from a tournament. We're like,
oh yeah, we had vendors.
Well, like Fuji was there as a vendor at a Naga tournament.
That's right. Year. That's right.
Otherwise, you're just getting a judo gi or a karate gi from Norm over at Judo Inc. And you would ride it back to the gym on your scooter.
I was just talking about this like a couple weeks ago. On my scooter with my army duffel bag, very symbolic to me, with my army duffel bag. And I remember hitting the gas. I had loaded up with all our gis we could possibly. Hitting the gas, maybe do an involuntary wheelie halfway through the intersection at a green light, because it tipped me back. Yeah, I don't miss that. I mean, I do actually. I'm nostalgic about it. But
so you were a part of jiu-jitsu pretty much since it started, at least in the United States, and you've kind of seen its evolution. And from my understanding, like, and with most athletics and cool things, right? They kind of start on the coast. They kind of move their way in. They'll get to Chicago kind of before they get to us. When did you start seeing jiu-jitsu actually start becoming a thing in Wisconsin? Like where you could go like, hey, there's a jiu-jitsu school now.
There's a jiu-jitsu school. So like, man.
Was it Henry's? Was Henry's kind of the first player?
Yeah. So I'm trying to think where the first place. Because we used to drive down and I could have the order messed up.
Yeah.
The order of the places. But like there was the Brickyard Gym. But before that, there was an old salon that I think is now a guitar store on Kinnikinnick. And before that, it was in at the corner of Lincoln and KK. It's now like a bakery. No, it's Voyager. It's a wine bar right now, I think.
Yeah.
And so that was those. So I guess, I mean, that would have been, oh man, I don't screw up the dates, but I'm just saying around 2000. I could be off by two or 3 years, but. The first person that showed me that having a jiu-jitsu school as like a profession, whereas everyone else was, everybody you knew, if they did have a school or the beginnings of a school, Also, let's not forget about Adrian Serrano too.
Oh,
let me not.
Legend.
OG. Yeah. You should get him out here.
Yeah.
He's got an amazing story and a million fights and super helpful to me.
Like legitimately a million fights. Well, over 100, I think.
I know for a while.
Documented.
Yeah. I know for a while he was like the top five at least of number of MMA fights or whatever.
Yeah.
But, that's another one too. He was in the back, like kind of a side project or a side program, I should say, at Duke Rufus Gym or whatever. Then you start to kind of, the jiu-jitsu starts to get popular, and then they need their space. So then things kind of happen like that. And so, but back to Justin Morris, he was the guy that, like, I heard that he quit his job. What are you going to do? Well, how are you going to keep the dojo? He's like, the dojo is going to keep itself, kind of thing. He didn't say those words, but like, so your job is you just have a dojo? That was on her.
Yeah.
He didn't do that. And I just had that in the back of my mind.
Especially in the jiu-jitsu space.
Yeah.
Right? Like karate and taekwondo, like they've had that down of, you know, how do you actually make it a career?
And we can learn a couple things.
100%. 100%.
But yeah, the jiu-jitsu was just like, well, I'm going to get you. I'm going to fight you. I'm going to go back to my job.
Yeah, we all have day jobs.
Yeah. But... And so like to make it your day job was it was really cool to watch him go through it because I remember him struggling too and being open about it and having his jobs and he's still kicking butt, like rocking it.
Yeah.
And so that was, and then, you know, things started popping up and they fizzle out, like Quantum Jiu-Jitsu for a while.
Oh, yeah.
But then, you know, then you got, and there's always something, I bet you a new school is opening up every year now.
All the time.
And I welcome it. It's such a, the more the better.
New ones open, some split into two, some open up other locations, some close.
Different angles. That's true art.
But it's definitely not been like, it's been fairly exponential growth.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I don't have a data scientist to analyze this, but it's not like linear by any means. Like, it's blown up in the last, you know, 10 years.
To hear it overheard in conversation by people that don't even practice it.
100%.
I would have never seen that coming.
100%.
And back in the day, just to even hear someone know what jiu-jitsu was uncommon. Now it's like, well, I'm going to jiu-jitsu you. That was never a thing.
Yeah.
So I thought that, I think that's pretty cool.
So what made you want to go from athlete to coach and from coach to gym owner?
Athlete to coach to coach?
Because like you were just doing jiu-jitsu for a while. And then I know that you were coaching at other people's places, right? I know you were coaching at Rufus Sport for a while.
Yep.
Helping out at other academies, kind of had your own little thing going on. But then you're like, there was a moment in time where like, I'm going to open up my own place.
Yeah. So the first part of just, I was young. I loved the empowering feeling. Like I mentioned of just, I won't be a victim and no one around me will. And I'm going to set the example. So it was such a powerful, like thing. I wanted more of it. And then, you know, once you get past that 1%, we're kind of talking about, it's like, I want to beat the other guys that can do jiu-jitsu too. Like, I fell in love with I fell in love with the martial part of the martial art.
Yeah.
But second, and the most important part is falling in love with the art of it. And once I got obsessed with all the intricacies of it, all the variations of it.
It
never stops. And that sounds intimidating if you're still in the martial phase.
Yeah.
But exhilarating if you're in the artist phase.
Yeah, and I love that concept because I tell people all the time when I'm talking to new students, like, it's like drinking from a fire hose, but you eventually learn to love drinking from the fire hose.
Yeah, or how to just take it into doses.
Yeah.
You have to put your whole mouth over
it. Yeah, 100%, because, like, I'll still go to a seminar that's 2 hours long with someone, and I'll be, like, straight over my head because there's so much information. And I've been doing jiu-jitsu for, I don't even know how long now, but, like, 17 years?
It's funny, the longer you do, the less you
but like, man. I still feel like that's, but I love it now. It's less intimidating. It's more like every time that happens to me, I'm like, there's still so much for me to learn. I love it.
I think that's it. Goes from intimidation to exhilaration. And you'll never, once you click over to that, once you flip into that, you're a true artist. You're like, just because you're a great potter doesn't mean you won't appreciate another painting gallery or musical performance. Like, art is art, and there's no two that are the same. And even if you're using the exact same colors, what are you going to do with those colors? And we talk about this all the time, too. There's some undeniable facts in the universe, in art, red and blue, make purple. Make purple. That's on the dial. You can't fight that, right? You can't get any more leverage. You can't get any more torque on anything than 90 degrees. These are just, there's certain unalienable rights, or not rights, well,
laws.
Laws. We teach those early, right? And those are undeniable. But what you do with those, that's the Perry of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
That's the John of jiu-jitsu, and that's every single teammate we have.
You make it your own.
Yes. So if you're still in that, I don't understand the basics phase, well, then there's just too much to learn. Why would I do this? This is dumb.
Yeah.
But if you show, look, there's only a few principles, just a few things. There's only certain ways you can mix colors.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get past that, then they're like, wait, I can do this?
Yeah.
And we always say too, like, you know, when you're a new person, the answers are great. You're looking for the answer. You're looking for the keys. You're looking for the answer, the plug and play. You know you're getting better at jiu-jitsu when the answer is, well, it depends.
Yeah.
That's real life.
Which is like almost always the answer in jiu-jitsu.
It is.
The answer is like almost always, it depends.
Yeah, right.
And there's always multiple right answers.
And as I'm the new guy, I won't hear that though.
Yeah, you want the answer.
Tell me what the answer is.
Yeah.
How do you escape mount? They really do expect, and I don't blame them.
Yeah.
How do I get out of a mount position? Okay, we use a couple tools.
And I think that's great for a new person because it gives them a singular target to aim for.
Just like checkers is good.
Yeah.
You have certain things that just...
It's easy.
Black and white, good and evil. Superman, Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Real life is like jiu-jitsu. Everything depends.
And then you add in like chess, and then it's another layer. And then you do whatever chess is on Star Trek, that 3D chess.
Oh, thing. Yeah. You know, I tried to make one of those boards, a homemade board. Can we swear out here?
You're a nerd.
Yeah, I am.
You can swear. I just didn't mark it as explicit.
Okay. So it should be fine. I mean, that was... But just like real life, too, like when you're a little kid, there's good and evil.
Yeah.
There's black and white, literally other pieces. Even in politics, there's red and there's blue and there's... Like I said, Superman, Lex Luthor, like, real life isn't like that. It's more Eastern, like the yin-yang, man, you know, like...
Yeah, like there's all the in-between, and that's where all the magic...
And that's where you have to be... You have to jiu-jitsu your way through. That's what I think one of the greatest benefits of jiu-jitsu all off the mats is your ability to look at it more realistically than idealistically.
Yeah.
Like, what really is happening here? You know, like, just because there's a hand in my collar doesn't mean I'm in trouble.
100%.
You know?
Like, it's just there. It's a fact. Yeah. Like, it's not a threat.
Yeah.
It's not an opportunity. It's just like, you can view it how you want to view it.
Yeah. Like, the classic, know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to run. But based on your deck.
Know when to run.
Know when to run. We don't run. Children of thieves run. No, but that's, I think that's one of the big things too, is just like that ability to zoom out and be like, oh, maybe what seemed right at the moment is wrong from the strategic picture and vice versa. Like, I think I got all the idea. Well, get down in the weeds, take a look. That zoom in, zoom out. I think that's a powerful life lesson. And I learned that in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Except luckily, maybe I would have learned it anyway doing underwater basket weaving.
Yeah.
But I started jiu-jitsu young enough that I think jiu-jitsu was the way.
You get to see like the micro picture and the macro.
Yeah. And I think it's a life skill everywhere. Every time someone cuts you off in traffic, the classic examples, right? You know, do you think maybe there's more to the situation?
One analogy I heard from one of my mentors about that is like, you know, I see things from my perspective, but then I need to be able to see things from your perspective. But then there's this zoomed out global perspective.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, I'm not in my shoes. I'm not in your shoes, but I'm in the camera shoes right now, looking at everything that's going on, the worldly perspective.
Bird's eye view.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And jiu-jitsu really gets you looking at.
Well, and even in a literal interpretation of that, me and you are rolling and you ask me a question. Well, wait, it depends. Am I you or are you me?
Yeah.
Or I'm watching you roll with somebody else. How do I advise you as I stand out? Like you said, I'm like the bird's eye view. It's nice to have a bird's eye view.
You see everything going on.
Like it is. It's like, it's nice to have a mentor or a therapist or some that looks over, take away all your little feelings you got from your inside. And just, how does this look from the outside?
Like completely detached.
Yeah. And how would I be if I was acting this way?
100%.
Yeah. I like, put yourself in the other shoes.
Yeah.
And that takes wisdom gained through applied living. And jiu-jitsu has just sped up lives over and over again.
And so we talked a lot about jiu-jitsu. I also don't want to neglect that you had a pretty successful and long MMA career too.
Oh, yeah.
How many fights over 30?
32.
32 fights.
Mm-hmm.
All over as well. Russia, fights in Russia. You never ended up fighting in Japan, did you?
No, I did. I had I did two combat wrestling things. One of them against Romino Sato.
Okay.
That was in 99 or 97.
So what made you want to get into MMA and why?
MMA, I never wanted to get into MMA.
Okay.
30 fights later, 32 fights. So one of the beautiful things about starting jiu-jitsu at the cusp of it when it started was that we were doing it before it was cool, you know?
And you could kind of just do MMA, but just do your jiu-jitsu and still win.
That's, yes.
Where MMA was still different martial arts against martial arts. It wasn't like well-rounded.
Yeah. Everyone was just tough and they could fight.
Yeah.
But jiu-jitsu, even wrestlers would just, they could only wrestle, so their wrestling wasn't as effective early on.
Yeah.
When they learned how to.
When they throw in a little bit of jiu-jitsu, then it gets really effective.
Yeah. Well, they brought us the ground and pound and lay and pray and all that. Like, but I mean, each of them had their influences, right? But yeah.
What's the biggest lesson you learned from MMA? Maybe life, maybe jiu-jitsu.
Biggest lesson from MMA?
Yeah. Like, what's your takeaway that you could give me from MMA so I don't have to do it myself?
Oh, yeah. Well, MMA is just another, I think MMA is just like jiu-jitsu, is just like other things. Like, you get out of it what you put into it. Mm-hmm. There's some guys that got out of MMA thinking, well, if I could have just, ooh, that guy, I wish I could have. But it taught me, like, you know, life is a team sport. But you are fully responsible for what you put into it and out of it. And when you're in that cage, it closes behind you and you are by yourself, even though you're part of a big team.
Yeah, and you have a corner man.
And one without the other is impossible. You can't do what you're about to do, win or lose, in that cage without the support and backing of the team that's part of your tribe, right?
Yeah.
And the tribe fails without the individual efforts of each one within it.
Mm.
And MMA brings that to light. One of my favorite memories of MMA was actually one of my most embarrassing, humiliating, quickest losses. All of them. Actually, you were there.
I was going to say, was I cornering you? I hope not.
It wasn't your fault, just because, again, it was on me. It was one of those, I don't believe in luck, but I got just cleaned right in the first seconds of the first round, probably 22 seconds.
All it takes is one good punch, and sometimes people don't realize that.
Yeah. What do they call the striker's dice roll or whatever? But I remember you mentioned Star Trek, my lights going in and out as I was going. I remember his leg against my face as I'm trying to take him down, but he's sprawling and hammering and hammering and hammering. And then I end up, the lights go up for good.
Is that when you got punched you got punched and you kind of fall, you got knocked out on your way to a double leg and then woke back up and fighting?
Yes.
Over and over again. I definitely remember that fight.
And tried to tackle the referee when I came to.
Yep.
Yeah. Who was Al Wickers?
Oh,
that's right.
Legend.
Legend,
referee.
He's probably ref more matches than anybody on Earth here. But I'm blacking out. I'm actually out. Then I wake up and they're like, what's going on? And I remember Pucci said, what do we do? And I'm like, get me to my feet. I don't know or whatever. Yeah. And then we got, it was for the belt. So we made sure the guy won the belt over me. And then I was so just humiliated. And
yeah,
that's on me, right? Humiliation is a choice.
Yeah, yeah.
I just couldn't deal with the emotional whatever. And I remember going back to the locker room. And you can just feel the crowd and just like, and here's the thing. And this is back to the whole, it takes a team. Even though I fought by myself, I'm sitting there and I'm crying. I'm sitting on a chair and I got tears running down my face. My gloved hands are over my face. I'm like, what the hell did you just, just really beat myself up.
Yeah.
And one of you guys are tapping me on the head saying, hey, oh, the ring doctor wants to see you, make sure you're okay or whatever. And I'm like, what? I look up. And you guys have a freaking cocoon built around me.
Yeah.
It was just, like, we didn't rehearse this. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, let him in. He opens up like a cocoon, actually. Like this.
Yeah.
And it lets him in. You guys close around him.
Yeah.
It's like you guys are protecting me from whatever. Mm-hmm. And nobody's getting to me without my... Yeah. It was really, really... And then it was, again, that Duke Rufus himself, the promoter of the thing, comes in like, hey, you okay? I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. He's like, you did great, man. This happens. Any given Sunday. So he's real support. And then, you guys opened up and closed around me like this. We never had a contingency for what we lost.
No.
Right? So that's on us. But to watch the way you guys came together, it was one of my favorite proudest moments, well, in my life, but in MMA and certainly jiu-jitsu and the whole journey, because like I'm part of that. If I saw that from the bird's eye view, watch how they cocooned over that guy.
Yeah.
That guy happens to be John or whatever. Like, they just
true team and family.
Yeah. You guys didn't have a plan. You guys didn't know what to do, but you knew protect him.
Yeah.
He's one of us and he would do the same for us. And that really like, it gives me chills thinking about it right now.
For sure.
And so talking about, I could have had just that one fight, not done 31 others.
Yeah.
But I really took that as a really, it made me feel like my purpose in jiu-jitsu is proper. And like, cause it is bigger than a fight.
Yeah. So now at this point in time in your career, you have all those fights under your belt. You have a lot of years of training, a lot of traveling jiu-jitsu.
Oh yeah.
You have two academies. You have your kids in jiu-jitsu now.
Yeah.
For the parents out there, what's your biggest tip coming from a person that's been doing jiu-jitsu for so long and owns academies? What's your biggest tip for parents around getting their kids involved in jiu-jitsu? Especially if you like really want them to do it.
This is a sore subject for me because
it's a hard one.
I'll tell you why I'm going to nail this answer though. Because I screwed up with the first and succeeded with the second. I screwed up initially. I say I learned from the mistake of the first.
Yeah.
But it's just play. It's just another game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's all stuff that we all should know better, but just, it's like baseball or football. This is just jiu-jitsu. You get to wear karate pants.
Yeah.
You know, a karate outfit and just play.
It's fun.
And yeah, there's no reason, unless somebody's in danger.
Yeah.
Like we have our kind of a 4-10 with our kids program. Like number one, keep it safe. If everything is gone haywire, just keep, you're there to protect
them. Number one.
Right. Always number one. Right. And then number two, before character development, before technical prowess is keep them having fun. Because if they don't have fun, they're never going to be able to work on their character or their...
That's what I stay with. They're going to want to quit right away.
So in that order, you know, you go in there thinking, I'm going to teach you how to, you know, do an armbar or pass the guard or take somebody down. But what's more important than that is, hey, who's being a turd? Like, this is how you line up. You respect your instructors and communicate and control your emotions and try to then have fun.
And let's be honest, there's no difference between that perspective that we should have for our kids and adults.
It's true.
Like adults, it needs to be safety and fun. Like if you join jiu-jitsu and you want to learn how to beat other people, but it needs to be fun.
Yeah. It's
even, and losing can be fun, but you have to find a way to make it fun.
It is. It takes a lot of a paradigm shift, right?
Yeah.
Because what does it mean to lose? It just means that person had their hand raised. I've seen people get greater victories out of their losses, and some people lose worse with the wins. You know, like, and you know, the same way I've been more physically damaged by victories.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, I've gone all with the worst for wear.
Yeah.
And that's a physical example of what could actually be a spiritual or emotional or, you know, you can lose with a win and win with a loss.
Yeah. It's like a lot of times those one hit knockouts are the safest.
Yeah.
It's the one
that's good to go.
It's the one that takes 30 hits that really damages.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'd rather be in a bare knuckle fight than an MMA fight, an MMA fight over a boxing fight.
Yeah.
I don't want to get in a pillow fight where I get 100 hit 200 pound, 200 times in the head. I'd rather get one clean one here that might open me, but I'm okay.
So main message is just keep it fun. Safe.
Fun. In that order.
Yeah.
And
then everything else comes based on that.
Yeah. Because then you start slipping with your, what's neat about jiu-jitsu as opposed to adults, but sometimes even with adults too, is sometimes you got to sneak the jiu-jitsu in.
Yeah.
Right.
And I've been telling a lot of my blue belts that lately, because they get to blue belt, they're like, what now? And I'm like, find something fun to work on.
Yeah.
Find a position, find a concept, find a sequence that, like, you're not doing it to win jiu-jitsu. You're just doing it because you find it fun.
Yeah. Let me just,
like, you need to find fun again. I think that's why a lot of times people get the blue belt blues.
Yeah.
Right. It's because they put all that work in to get their blue belt, and then they keep putting that work in and they start getting burnt out. It's like, no. You need to start having fun again.
That white to blue belt, we just talked about this last night after class. That white to blue belt, and kind of talking about the blue and through.
Yeah.
What'd you call the blue blues?
Blue belt blues?
Blue belt blues, yeah. For sure. And I think one causes the other. The blues cause the... There's such a... it's still the majority stay, right? But when someone gets a blue and they're through, I think it's, you're like that seed under the soil and you're just getting watered. And when you're a white belt and you're just getting watered, it's like, I just got taken. That information is a little bit of water. That's some warm soil. That's some nutrients in the soil. But once you are blue belt, you sprout and you got leaves sticking out of you like this. There's a lot of pressure, literally pressure, air pressure and wind in the form of, oh, you got a blue belt now? If I get a blue belt, that means I have to hammer you.
Yeah.
Or I'm a purple belt or brown belt. They're like, I'm going to put you to the test. You have all these extra stressors now because you are exposed to direct sunlight and wind and cold and animals.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, that's what leaps them to purple is if they can weather those storms and use them. This sunlight's not going to burn my leaves. It's going to grow them. This rain is not going to flood us. It's going to nurture us. And the purple belt trying to rip my head off, that's a compliment to me. That just means I'm trying to da-da-da-da. And so like, we have to almost let them know, here it comes.
Yeah.
Now you're blue belt. You have all this new exposure that you weren't to before. You're no longer protected by the soil, you know, at least the visual. So I think that's part of the blues of the blues.
Yeah. What's your trick to balancing everything that you have going on between owning two academies, teaching classes, training for yourself? You have your kids. You have your kids doing classes. You have a pond and a cold plunge in your backyard. You're making your own yogurt now. Like, how do you balance all this? As a school owner, as someone who's doing their own athletic training, to a parent?
By saying no.
That's my favorite.
Is it?
I love saying no.
Yeah. No is
really hard to do first.
Yes, because here's the thing. Successful people know how to say yes. Very successful people know how to say no.
Yeah.
You're not going to get anywhere if you don't have the bravery to say yes to opportunities when they come, or yes to yourself, I can do this. But that only gets you so far until you have the ultimate bravery to say no. Because every time you say no, you have the option of saying yes to other things. But every time you say yes, you don't have any other options. I looked at no is a complete sentence, but yes is an obligation.
That's true.
And so I, because of that, every time I have a new endeavor, a new adventure, a new whatever, oh, is your life harder now? Is it harder now? It's actually easier because if it doesn't fill into my categories of my life that are important, most important to me, they're just not, I don't feed them, so they die.
And sometimes no doesn't have to be no. It could be not right now.
Yeah.
Right? It's a superpower being able to do that.
It is. And it should be your knee jerk.
Yeah.
I think, you know, but if you're 20 though, or 21 or even 70, and you haven't whipped it out yet, say yes then. Say yes to just about everything.
Yeah.
But as you start getting constricted, as the fronts start to, now you got to pick, okay, which one, you know, you got to explode out. You have to get something, but then you got to start shielding up too.
What do you look forward to the most from like today onwards? Right. You have your two academies. You have a ton of students. You have your association. You have your kids doing jiu-jitsu. What are you looking forward to the most in your jiu-jitsu journey? Like moving forward, what really excites you?
I just going forward with jiu-jitsu, I just like seeing all what it's done for my life, jiu-jitsu specifically, to see others using jiu-jitsu in different directions, but still using jiu-jitsu and the foundational concepts of jiu-jitsu. On and off the mat, it inspires me. Like, I want to see what art they come up with.
Yeah.
Literally or figuratively. Like, I love watching, again, like I always fall back on it for getting through stuff in my life and just really trying to thrive with these concepts. To see other people doing that and having a part of that is so fulfilling. So it's so like emotionally fulfilling to me. Like it like just, it completes, it like gives me that like thing that I think a lot of us are missing, and that's a job that you have passion for because you have service. It matters. You matter. Like, and if I can be of any service to any of them, I can't give up.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
like because you make a difference.
Yes.
And it's not in you, it's the jiu-jitsu that you're sharing with.
Yes.
Like you're almost just opening their idea, their brain to there's more out there. There's other perspectives. There's ways that
they, and they do it to me too. They do it right back.
100%.
So like every time you, inside every black belt is a white belt.
Yeah.
Every white belt is a black belt to be, right? And I just, like, every time I'm exposed to another person that I may have helped with jiu-jitsu, they're exposing me to some other thing I'm learning from them with.
And I tell my students this all the time, but, like, I have this thing around anytime I help someone else with their goals, they help me with my own. So the more people I can help, the more help I get in return. If I don't help anyone, then I'm flying solo.
That's true. What do they say? If you want to go fast, go alone.
Yeah.
If you want to go far, go together.
I like that.
Yeah, that's a...
You're just like a little book of quotes.
Quotes matter to me, man. Like, I wake up on the quote, man. I don't know. Yeah, it's cheesy and they're cliche, but they're cliche for a reason.
They're going to hit you up with 10 rapid-fire questions.
Oh,
they might not be super rapid-fire, but we'll close with this.
Do I have a time limit for each one?
No. Gi or no gi? Right now, at this point in time.
I do more gi, but I'm way more into no gi right now. Because it's just because of the consequences.
I love it.
Yeah.
What are you currently working on in your jiu-jitsu game?
For me personally?
Yeah.
Or the timer. The best way to describe it is, in a word, I guess I haven't described it in words, like looking at a position that we're in, so the technical position we're in, mm-hmm. and how from another angle that might be just one hip switch away from a different position. For example,
global perspective we were just talking about.
Yeah, zooming out from the outside and being like, what's the classic humorous one? In space, the mount is also the guard.
Yeah.
Almost like that, but with a little bit more complicated positions.
I love it. Cool. Favorite submission of the moment?
The one they give me.
Top person you would love to train with given the opportunity? Alive or dead, doesn't matter.
Alive or dead. Both of my kids when they're black belts.
Oh, very cool. Best advice for beginners?
Take off the street belt and put on the white belt, if that's where you are in your stage, and trust the process. There's a lot being thrown at you. Listen or don't listen. Just keep coming back. Just twice a week, make it your goal. Any more, you may burn out. Any less, you may fall out. Trust the process. A lot of this thinking has been done for you. You don't have to be a master of anything. Everybody in that room was you once, and just have faith in that.
One word to describe your jiu-jitsu style.
Fumbling.
That was me last night.
I bet. I had those days. I would say in progress. Well, that's two words. Evolving.
Oh, love it. What's the toughest aspect of jiu-jitsu to master?
We almost talked about it before, or we were kind of talking about it before. I think the toughest part of jiu-jitsu is learning how to turn obstacles into advantages and failures or losses into wins. But it's also the most beautiful thing you get out of it, right?
What's one habit that has significantly improved your life? Could be saying no.
Saying no is a good one. Most up before the enemy.
It's like being an early riser.
Yes. And it doesn't necessarily be in the morning, but be ready before anything. So it'll be like third shifters, for example. Yeah. For me, it works. I need to be up well before my kids are.
And I know one thing that you always told me in jiu-jitsu, you're always the first person off the mat. Like, whether you win, you lose, you're the first person to stand up.
Oh, yes. I thought off the mat. Like, wait, what do you mean?
No, not off the mat, but like when you're on the ground and you reset, like you are up before that. Your opponent.
You remember? Yeah, I still try to be. Yeah, if you don't know what that is, you know, right? Like, okay, all right, we're all down. Okay, everybody get up. Try to be the first one up.
Yeah,
but just up for your own mental resilience.
What's one habit that has successfully improved, significantly improved your jiu-jitsu? Do you have any habits?
Passing it on.
Yeah.
I see this too. I've watched it even with my children, but even with white, blue, purple, any belt. When they are helping somebody else out with something they need, their jiu-jitsu goes up.
And last one, I know you have a lot of these. Favorite book?
Favorite book. That sucks because that depends on the audience.
This audience,
which is basically anybody interested in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, or doing jiu-jitsu.
Oh, no. Oh, man. God, because
okay, give me your top three. So make it easier.
Let me tell. Here's what grabs me. What I return to the most.
Okay.
His Marcus Aurelius Meditations. Everybody knows that one. That's a classic, right? Because I just fall by. He's like my ultimate advisor, even though it's written weird and everything. But Meditations, I would say, we'll say that. That's a good one to start with. Any of the letters of Seneca that he's writing to his Lucilius.
Awesome.
I like the kind of old Greek and Roman stuff.
I read Meditations specifically, but I've done the Daily Stoic, which brings in information from.
Bulls. Anything by Ryan Holiday, the author of that, he has good stuff too. And what's nice about him, I should probably recommend those. The Obstacle is the Way. How about that?
Yeah.
Or Ego is the Enemy.
He does a good job at breaking down the verbiage.
He will make Marcus Aurelius fun.
Yeah.
He'll make Marcus Aurelius fun again. That'd be a good... anything by Ryan Holiday, I guess, would be... Because he's a good gateway. And then once you fall in love with all that and you want to go deeper, then you go look at Epictetus and Seneca and Chrysippus and Plato. Yeah.
Well, that was it, man. Anything else you'd like to share with the Inside the Wave audience, your students, your jiu-jitsu family, your community?
No, just if you're not on the journey... Give it a shot. Give it at least 4 seasons. And I mean 4 seasons like of a year, 4 seasons of your jiu-jitsu development, ups and downs. Give it a shot. Stay the course. Trust the process. Pass it on.
Yeah.
And just, you're welcome.
Well, it's been awesome. I appreciate you. I want to thank you personally for being my coach and helping me on this journey. You know, you didn't bring me into jiu-jitsu, but you've kept me in it. And you've supported me with everything I've done along the way.
Back at you. I've learned so much from you, including this.
So thanks for checking in. Thank you, John Freeland. Subscribe to this, like this, share this. We love you guys. Thank you so much.